This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 423 for June 8th of 2018. Look, Ma, no hands. Here comes Cadillac Super Cruise. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at outofline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Out of Line in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube.
Out of Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Well, welcome, everybody, to Out of Line After Hours, especially you, Gary Vasilash. I'm sitting here next to you, guy. Man, it's been like ages.
Yeah, it has been a couple shows.
I've been out of town, and you've been hosting the show. And
yeah. You were up in Mackinac taking care of political issues for
I took care of the state.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Exactly. That's fantastic of you. I appreciate that very much, and I took care of the show.
Good. And we got to let everybody know, Stephanie Brinley with IHS Market is with us again.
Yes, thanks very much for having me back.
Yeah, great having you here, Stephanie. But we got to turn our attention to the special guest of the show today, Jason Dittmar, chief engineer for Cadillac Super Cruise. Welcome to Out of Line After Hours.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I learned just before the show started that you're actually kind of new to Super Cruise. Tell us, thumbnail sketch, your career.
So 25 years this summer, I started with the Transmission Engineering Group in Ypsilanti, Michigan.
For General Motors.
For General Motors as a transmission noise and vibration development engineer. Spent the majority of those 25 years within the transmission engineering organization. For the last 6 or 7 years, I've been a chief engineer for either our hybrid or an electric drive units. That's where I met you, was when we were working on the Volt.
Yeah.
We crossed paths.
Right.
And the last 2 years, I was the chief engineer for the 8-speed transmission. So I'm pretty familiar with the Cadillac CT6 because the 8-speed prior to 2019 was in the CT6. Joined the Super Cruise team in October.
What a jump. Transmission engineer to running Super Cruise?
There's a lot of commonality.
Really? How so?
Well, you think about what a transmission or an engine chief engineer does. We try to take and put common hardware across multiple applications. There's a lot of interactions with software and calibration, and we try to do that with as little proliferation as possible. And we work very closely with the vehicle chief engineers. So I come into this role. What am I trying to do?
Same thing.
So I find that I rely on the skills that I developed as a chief engineer working for Dan Nicholson to work on Super Cruise.
So are there any issues that you run into in terms of the various sensor systems that would be different than the types of sensors that you guys use in developing transmissions? Or do you have people for that?
Well, an entirely different set of sensors, right? Transmissions, I spent about 8 years responsible for the hardware and electromechanical controls in transmissions. That was where I cut my teeth before I went to work on hybrids. We use a lot of electromechanical solenoids, a lot of digital speed sensors, range switches and range sensors that are non-contact. But we don't use radars or cameras or high-definition maps. So I'm used to working with electromechanical components, just not these types of components.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No. Yesterday, General Motors announced, big announcement on Super Cruise, going to go across the board on Cadillac, right?
It was a good day for my team.
Yeah.
If anybody on my team is out watching right now, get to work. We're late at something. We're late at something. So we've all known for some time, right? We've had these plans in place to do this. And as I told you earlier, when I found out when Mark was going to announce this, I was like, well, this will make for a real interesting conversation today.
Yeah.
But it's an exciting time. It's exciting because we have a lot of confidence in Super Cruise, in what we did to launch it. And now to have the opportunity to put this across multiple vehicles within the portfolio is exciting, and we've got a lot of work to do. There's a lot of job security right now for my team. Right.
So for people who are not familiar with Super Cruise, I mean, we're acting like everybody on Earth knows what it is.
Yeah.
So give us a reset. What is Super Cruise? What does it do, and how does it work?
So Super Cruise is the first hands-free on-highway driving system that in the industry. If you get on what we call a limited access road, so in this area, 696 when it's open, 75, 275, all roads that are divided and have well-defined entrance and exit ramps, we have mapped, and Super Cruise is available on those roads.
In every 50 state?
In across the nation, yes.
Yeah.
And in Canada, we have roads also similar that fall into that category in Canada. So you get on one of those roads, you get the car centered in the lane that you're driving in, and you engage Super Cruise. You get the indication from the steering wheel that turns green to let go. And
we should add, there's a set of LED lights in the top of the steering wheel.
Set of LED lights in the steering wheel, and we use that as a primary means to communicate with the driver. Green is good. If it turns green, you can let go. You still have to pay attention. If you start to look away from the road, looking out the window at a cloud or something, look away for too long, we start with a little subtle reminder where we flash that light bar green to bring you back to focus on the road, because you need to stay engaged, because the sensors that are on the car require you to stay engaged, because we might ask you to take over. If you look away for a little bit longer, it's a little bit more severe. We flash red. Your seat vibrates. I don't know if you've been through this, if you've seen the escalations that we do.
Yeah.
Seat vibrates. Super Cruise will disengage. We'll slow down a little bit more aggressive to bring your focus back, but we'll let you re-engage. If you ignore all of those or those two, we get more aggressive where we actually take Super Cruise away from you.
Disconnect it
for that drive cycle. So you'd have to get off the road, key off, key back on. We break the car a little bit more aggressively to get your attention. All that is done to try and train the driver to be paying attention, right? You need to pay attention. And the studies that we did told us that was the best way to get the driver to pay attention, right? You're constantly reminding them to be looking away. And it starts subtle and it gets more aggressive, kind of like I deal with my kids when they do something wrong. Start subtle, take your phone away, but it's easy to get it back.
Correction, though. You said this is the only hands-free one. Tesla would probably take issue with that statement.
I understand that they might take issue, but we're the only ones that confidently say you can let go.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
If you look in their owner's manual, they'll still say you need to hold on to the steering wheel.
Okay, good point.
So it's adaptive cruise control and it's steering.
Correct.
Now, does it go to zero?
Yes. So the beauty of the system, I find, is in traffic jams. The car slow down in front of you, it will bring you to a complete stop. And when that car in front of you takes off, it will accelerate again at that same rate that car is taking off. It's a really smooth acceleration and deceleration. I have a daughter who gets motion sick, and she hates it when I drive in traffic. The first time we were in traffic in Super Cruise, she did not complain one bit.
No kidding.
It's smoother at accelerating and decelerating than I am.
It's really smooth, and it's also fast enough that you're not feeling like you're never going to get there, right? A lot of adaptive cruise control systems, when they initially, the reacceleration was always kind of laggy and a little bit slow.
Yeah, and somebody cuts in front of you.
Somebody cuts in front of you, and
you don't have to do anything?
No.
I mean, so because some systems that when you come to zero, then to re-engage, you have to push a button or...
Yeah, hit resume.
Yeah. Super Cruise stays engaged.
Stays engaged the whole time.
The other thing I got to compliment you on is a lot of the self-driving, you know, systems that we've got today, which require you to keep your hands on the wheel, really nibble at the wheel going through the turns. What I was really impressed with Super Cruise on was just how smooth an arc it would cut through just about every turn on the highway.
Yeah.
So our engineers call that the blue line. They must be hockey fans. I keep saying that over and over again. Maybe they were. But we try to draw this imaginary line right down the center of the road in between those two lane lines. And we use inputs from the front camera. We use information from the 3D map that we have on the car that we get lane width and slope, curvature of the road. We have entrance and exit ramps marked so we know where they are, because if you're in the right-hand lane and you've got an exit going off to the right, in some locations, that right-hand lane line disappears. Mm-hmm. Because we have that tagged in the map, we control based on the left-hand lane line. So we go to great lengths to have multiple inputs that are fused together to steer that trajectory right down the center of the road.
And it makes it much more smooth. I think when I first heard about Super Cruise and first experienced it, the way that you apply the mapping I found really interesting too, because you're not just looking at the sensors, but you know how big that curve is. You know when it's turning around, when it's going to straighten back out again. And if I remember right from my first discussion with Super Cruise too, that some of that information played into how quickly you need to bring drivers back, because you know if it's a 5 mile straight, or you know if you're coming into a turn, and that can play into how much you'll allow your driver to not look at the at the road for a second. Which is it's an amazing level of processing going on in the machine.
Does it work in all weather conditions?
If the cameras can see the lane lines, it works. This past winter, there was a lot of snow, and it would melt, right? Then it would snow some more, and, the snow would build up on the side of the road. If the camera can't see the lane lines, it won't operate. Or if the sensor gets blocked, a radar gets blocked, the radars are down low on the CT6, the forward-looking radar. If that sensor gets blocked with snow, it won't operate.
So if you're driving and it was a blizzard, that it might shut off at some point?
It will escalate back. We call this escalation. I learned this word when I started with the team. We call it escalations. So if Super Cruise is engaged and you're driving down the road and it loses lane lines, it will escalate back to you, mm-hmm. where it'll coast. The seat will vibrate, or the chime will come in depending on how you have the car configured, and that steering wheel will vibrate. That's the indication that we need you to come back and take control, whether you're not paying attention or we need you for some other reason to take back control of the car.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I really liked in the way it drove, too, is sometimes even on highways, there'll be a turn where you got to slow down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it slowed down automatically, and not because somebody else in front of me was slowing down. And that's the only time I've ever experienced that in any of these semi-automated systems, because regular cruise control, adaptive cruise control, will not slow down for a curve.
That goes back to your mapping.
That goes back to the map. That's the curvature information that we get from that high-definition map that's resident in the car, helps us to do curve speed control.
So is it coordinating with the GPS system to know where it is in space?
Yes, we use the GPS connection to know where we are. We use that to position ourselves to kind of know where we are in the lane. So you do require the GPS signal to be present in order for Super Cruise to operate.
Is that why it doesn't work in a tunnel?
That's why it doesn't work in a tunnel. You will lose the GPS corrections in a tunnel. We attempt to steer through a short tunnel. We don't want to take it away from you if it's a short tunnel. But I think our limit is 1,000 meters before we'll say that's long
it's
enough.
Pretty long
to give up.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting system to drive. And one of the things that I thought was neat about it is how that interaction, that escalation, you really are teaching your driver as well kind of how to interact with it. And it's pretty easy to learn. I mean, as you get centered into your lane, when you decide you're going to change lanes and you turn your blinker on and get back over, getting a sense of where you actually need to be before it's going to kick in. I mean, the first time you try it, you're like, is it going to? But it doesn't take very long to kind of get through it, but it ends up being a learning process, I feel like, that you're learning the system and the system seems to learn you a little bit too.
Yeah, when we talked, I joined the team after launch. So day one, you're going to get the job. Go get a car. So I went and got a car, and I was at our company vehicle operations. And they said, you want to show us how it works? No, I've got it. I took off, and I'm like, I'm not sure I have it. and there was a get-to-know-you guide right there on the seat. So I pulled over into a parking lot, and I looked. I'm like, okay, got it. There's the icon. There's the button.
Yeah.
Go.
It's pretty easy.
Pulled out on 96, and once I got centered in the lane, it was easy.
Right.
And then that 60-mile drive home that day, I think I touched the steering wheel three times.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first moment for me to say, okay, I think we've got something here that is really good.
Here's one thing that I found. I had my wife drive the car, and she was a little bit – she wasn't all that comfortable with it, especially when we were passing semis. She felt it was too close to the semi. And it never hit me before, but I wonder if we all drift a little bit to the far side of a lane when we're passing a semi so we don't feel as close. Is that anything that you guys have gotten feedback on?
We have received feedback on that, and I think that's natural. I learned when I started driving Super Cruise that I was a left of center driver. I grew up in small town Illinois. There were no sidewalks, right? So people were always walking on the side of the road. We were taught to crowd the yellow line. Yeah. So that's the way I learned. And so when I got into Super Cruise, I felt that I wasn't in the right position. So it took a little bit of time for me to get used to that. Right. There was one time there was a dump truck right next to us, and I looked over at my wife, and she was leaning over. She's like, wow, that thing's really close. Why don't you move over? So you know, there have been some discussions about how would we and could we pick that up and automatically, you know, move over just a little bit, just to give you a little bit more comfort.
So what happens if you manually move the wheel? Does it disengage?
Now, if you take the wheel, right, we've got the sensors on the steering wheel that we know you took it. Steering wheel turns blue that says you've taken it. Super Cruise is still engaged, so you can move over. That's how you change lanes. And we won't disengage unless you've held on and grabbed that steering wheel, have been steering for a considerable amount of time. Mm-hmm. You know, we won't disengage. We will assume you're going to eventually let back go. And then once you get centered and you've gone green, we can let go again.
Mm-hmm. And these two have mentioned the if you're distracted or looking out the window or something, how does it know?
We have a camera. There's a camera on the steering column that is looking at your face, and it's tracking where your head is looking and whether your eyes are open or closed.
Well, hold on, because I had my sunglasses on the whole time, and that blew me away.
Okay.
That even with dark, and these are dark sunglasses, it was able to tell when I was paying attention to the road, and it could tell when I was not paying attention to the road.
Right. There was a lot of development work that was done.
I'll bet.
To figure out how to see through sunglasses.
Well, let's hold this picture that we got on the screen right now.
Excellent.
That little black bump on the, you know, at the sort of the center of the steering column there. That's the camera looking back at you.
And those two, the three red lights on each side, those are infrared emitters. We use those to help see through sunglasses and to see whether your eyes are open at night. We can see through most sunglasses. We can't see through all. In the development process, you know, we had issues.
And there it is. There's a close-up of the camera.
In the development process, we had issues with some people who had a lot of facial hair that we sort of struggled with that a little bit, too. I was on a
the engineering issues you have to deal with. Yeah. Then somebody's got a big beard.
Who'd have thunk it?
You know, sunglasses, hats pulled down low, and a lot of facial hair. Those are things that the team worked through to try. And the whole goal was to, you know, ensure availability. You don't want to constantly be escalating and taking the system away from someone who just decided to grow a beard or decided to put on sunglasses. You want the system to be available and usable, you know, all the time.
Yeah,
I did notice the center of lane thing as well. And I've noticed it in some of the other cars that we've driven that have lane centering situations that my version of where the center of that lane is does not always align with the system that I'm driving. And it was an interesting thing to learn that I just don't really know where the center is. I mean, we just adjust one way or another.
So why is it so important to be paying attention to the road when you have this automated system?
They don't want to get sued when there's a big accident.
What's the engineering reason for paying attention to the road?
You know, this is classified as a level 2 autonomous system with the SAE levels, right? The sensors on the car have a certain capability, and that sensing capability requires you to pay attention and be ready to take control. It's the configuration of the hardware and the fidelity of the hardware that requires the drivers to always be paying attention.
Mm-hmm. So the announcement the other day was that in 2020 you'll be expanding to other Cadillac models. And it wasn't entirely clear. So do all of the Cadillac models get it in 2020? And you've had it on the road now since 2017. Is that a long time to be rolling this thing out? I mean, it's that'll be like three years before we see it expand?
So we start the rollout in 2020. Okay. A lot of people miss that start.
I thought it was a start
to the rollout in 2020. Okay. And we expand from there. And, you know, I heard Mark say this. Yes, it's going from 2017 to 2020, but it's not a stagnant system, right?
Right.
We are working not only to roll this out on other applications within the fleet, but we're going to make the system better.
Mm-hmm. So first thing I got to believe is automatic lane changing. If I put on the turn signal, will the car be able to automatically change
lanes? It doesn't do that today. No, that's the driver's responsibility.
I'm asking about the next step.
And you know that I can't talk about that, right? Okay. What fun would it be if I told it all to you now? The next 2 years, you wouldn't be out trying
to figure
out what's going on.
Well, I have to think that 2020, I think is really when we're going to see a new Escalade. So I don't know. That's my bet.
So...
let the speculation begin.
An announcement was also made about expanding the vehicle-to-vehicle communication.
Right.
Does that have anything to do with Super Cruise, or are these two separate
they
systems?
They are separate.
Are you working on that at all?
No. No, okay. That is not.
Because we got a question here from NC who wanted to know, is it going to be DSRC or is it going to be LTE?
They said DSRC.
DSRC,
yeah. It's an evolution of what they had already launched.
Speaking of questions, we got a lot here. Mike from San Francisco wants to know, is Super Cruise affordable enough that the Chevrolet Cruise may one day have it?
Well, again, we're not allowed... We can't talk about future product.
Well, let's talk about, you know, cost. And I know you can't talk specifics in cost, but... I got to believe that this is something that you can get down to where you could put it on about anything.
So inevitably, as you expand volume, right, cost comes down. And you have to look at that on a case-by-case basis to say, you know, can the cost come down enough to put it on that type of vehicle?
Mm-hmm.
The announcement the other day did say we'll go to other brands within the GM family. So, you know, to your point, you can't necessarily talk about future products. So when the Chevrolet Cruze gets it, but GM's intention is to move it through the company.
I think there'd be a certain exclusivity that they'd want to keep with the technology so that it wouldn't be on every possible vehicle.
But maybe not. I mean, we're looking at a world, too, where autonomous driving gets to be a bit more important thing. And if it's if Super Cruise is a system that it contributes to safety, I don't know that there really is, other than cost, a reason that you would want to not have it on a certain model. Cost is a pretty big reason. But it's not something... It's a safety feature that can make... you know, the long drive, it can make the traffic jam.
At this
jam.
Point, isn't it a driver convenience feature more than a safety feature?
It's a driver assistance feature, yes.
Right. So it's not what you're arguing.
No.
Sorry,
but that leads to a great question. What's been the customer feedback? What are owners telling you about it?
So we've gotten a lot of positive feedback from our owners. We received a 5-page letter from an early buyer, a gentleman who saw his car built at Dehem, then took it on a long drive through Wyoming, and he gave us this, you know, laundry list of, you know, they were great observations, and I'd be lying if I said he didn't nail a whole lot of things that we were already working on. And some of those we've already released. So we've already...
We've already upgraded
the system. So we've made 2 map updates already. Mm-hmm. And you say, well, why do you update maps? We update maps because when roads go through significant construction, after that construction is complete, we turn it off to remap it just to make sure that nothing significant has changed. So we don't turn it off during the construction. We turn it off after the construction. Once we're notified the construction is complete, we remap, and then that's what we would put in a map re-release. So we've already done 2 of those map re-releases. In March, we made our first change to software to improve the messaging to the customer. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you noticed the only message probably when you drove the car, it may have said Super Cruise unavailable.
Yep.
Yes.
So now we have 15 different messages that... are available to the customer that'll tell you either why it disengaged or why it's available. Lost, no GPS, can't see the lane lines, not centered in the lane. Those are just some examples. We also worked on improving close cut-ins with a car cutting in close to you, mm-hmm. so that we don't get this false, hard, aggressive braking, and we stay engaged and we're able to handle those better. So those were in the upgrade that we just did.
Mike Flowers writes in to ask, can you also use the nav system while using Super Cruise?
You can use the nav system, but they're not linked.
Why not? And I'll give you one good example. As I was driving up to Mackinac Island in the CT6 with Super Cruise, I went up US 127, and there's a part where it curves to the right, but if you go straight, that's an exit to Clare, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And the car wanted to take me straight because the lane markings are kind of vague at that right. very spot. But if I had put in my destination on the nav, it would, no, he wants to keep on going on up 127.
Yeah, right now there's no link between the nav system and what Super Cruise does. You're responsible for picking that route yourself.
So in that case, John, did you just simply have to... adjust the wheel?
Yeah, I took the wheel.
And then let it go do its thing after that?
I anticipated it. I saw the road curving off to the left and the lane I was in going straight. And I thought, ooh, this is going to be interesting. Let's see how it handles this. And I'm going 80 miles an hour, down this ramp. So I just took the wheel and...
You're going 70.
Driver's right. responsible for speed.
Yeah, right. I heard that it doesn't work over 92 miles an hour.
You cannot engage it above 85 miles an hour.
Oh, okay.
So if you try to engage it, if you're above 85, it will not engage.
Okay.
You can drive through it with the pedal. You can take over and just like you can with adaptive cruise, right? You can take over and accelerate with the pedal, but you just it will not disengage, mm-hmm. But you can engage it above 85.
But once you release from the pedal, it'll go back mm-hmm. to below.
Yes, just like adaptive cruise.
Greg Schwartz wants to know, can you speed? Yes, you can. I can answer that question
your own
for
risk.
You.
At your own risk.
Right. We got a lot of questions here. Where was the other one that I was just looking at? What are Barry Rector from Indy wants to know, what are insurance companies telling you? What's their reaction to Super Cruise? Are they involved in this at all?
I don't believe the insurance companies are involved, and I've gotten no feedback from any of our customers that the insurance companies are raising their policy because they've got a driver assistance system. I haven't got feedback that they're lowering it either.
How many are in the field, roughly?
Shy of 1,000.
Okay.
Because, with certain companies will give you a discount on insurance for some safety technologies. I want to say, I shouldn't even say the names because I could be wrong, but like with automated emergency braking and the like, I think somebody will give you a discount on it.
Yeah, but to the point we said, I think we're still classified as a driver assistance system.
It's like the Bose audio, John. It's not the...
WikiRon 007 wants to know, what about over-the-air updates, or do you have to take it to the dealer for any upgrades to the system?
So the map updates happen over the air, but any other updates, right now you have to take the vehicle to the system to have the dealership perform the update.
So if somebody has a car right now, they can go in and get those messages?
Yes. We're reaching out to Cadillac customers now. To ask them to bring their vehicles in to have them updated free of charge. Mm-hmm.
GP Man wants to know, what if you have a heart attack and you pass out? Would the car pull over?
So that's the last level of escalation that I didn't talk about. At some point, if you've ignored the warnings, we assume that there is some medical condition going on with the driver. We'll bring the car to a slow stop, controlling it in the lane, hazard lights will be on, OnStar emergency services will call into the car, and if the driver's unresponsive, then they will call first responders. Mm-hmm. But we will bring it to a stop in the lane it's in slowly with the hazard lights on to not have issues with rear-end accidents behind.
Which could still happen anyway.
Could still happen.
So that's what I'm wondering. In future iterations, as you get more and more comfortable with the technology, is there thought to just pulling it to the side of the road? Maybe.
There's a lot of complications associated with doing that. Mm-hmm. And just one of those is, well, you have to know exactly what lane you're in and have confidence of what lane you're in to be able to do that. And right now, if we go outside the lane line, we escalate, right? We say, come back in because the car's crossed the lane line. So those are a lot of things that we'd have to get over in order to do that. So there's some technical advances we'd have to do.
So if you were on 696, you're in the left lane and you wanted to pull over to the right, I mean, and it, the system took over, I mean, wouldn't it realize it is now taken over and it is now crossing the lane lines deliberately rather than?
If you take control of the wheel and the sensors have picked it up and you cross a lane line, that's not a problem.
Right.
If the car, for some reason, runs into control issues and starts to drift towards that lane line and we cross that lane line, the cameras will pick that up and will escalate saying, hey, driver, come back in. Mm-hmm. You need to come back in.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're supposed to take a break right now, but we got way too many questions. I think we got to keep on going. Carmen, what do you think? Should we just break for one commercial now and save another for later?
Just do double.
Why don't we take a break right now? Because we got a lot of questions coming in and more to talk about. So, quick commercial break. We'll be right back talking with Jason Dittman about Super Cruise.
Lear Kinexis offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts. All delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
Okay, we're back talking all about Super Cruise. We got a couple of questions here from Yang Yang Chang and SubGR77 wanting to know, what if you come into road construction? What does it do?
So the owner's manual advises not to use it in road construction, but if you're engaged, Super Cruise is engaged and you come into road construction, we won't escalate, we won't disengage, but we do recommend that the driver takes over in a construction zone.
So, yeah, you would just see, hey, I'm coming into a lower speed limit area, because they usually lower the speed limit in construction, and you would have to, it'd be your duty to slow the car down.
Well, if there's cars in front of you that are slowing down, it's going to slow down for you. Right. But we say, hey, it's your responsibility in a construction zone to take over.
So what about one of those situations where the lanes break, so you're going down 75 and they're working on the center lane, mm-hmm. and so some cars go off to the left and some cars go to the right, and you're basically going down this, you know, with the Jersey blocks on either side. Does the car know that, or do you have to put it in that lane and then it goes?
The car won't know that. Depending on how well the new lanes are marked, we will follow those lanes. In a lot of cases where, from what you've described, the lane markings will be so poor that we'll lose lane confidence and we'll escalate to the driver and say, hey, you got to take control. You know, in that kind of a situation.
And it's, I mean, Super Cruise, as we've talked about, is a driver assist. I don't think that it's necessarily intended to perpetually be on. Right?
It all depends what kind of road you're on.
Well,
right,
yeah,
exactly.
It works in certain situations, but I don't think that at this point, nothing from Cadillac or GM has said, we're expecting this to be, you know, perpetually on.
Right.
It's meant to assist when it can. For sure. And did I read it was 150,000 miles or so in north and south?
130,000 miles of mapped roads in the U.S. and Canada.
So there's still a lot of places you can use it, but it's not necessarily meant to be on all the time.
Right.
And Ray Matrowitz wrote in. He wants to know, what role is Super Cruise playing in GM's development of autonomous vehicles?
So they are separate activities, you know, the work that's going on with Cruise Automation is solely focused on full autonomy. Mm-hmm. We're a level 2 driving system, and we're going to work to make this as best level 2 driving system that we can, and a nice convenience for our customers.
Mm-hmm. Alexander Karabitsis wants to know, will you eventually offer over-the-air updates to recognize new road infrastructures that are going in? Well, you said the maps are done over the air.
The maps are done over the air, yes. And we have planned updates 4 times a year. Those can be those don't have to be evenly spaced. If we see something that is a major construction area that needs something done right away, we can break that every 3 month cycle if we need to.
Mm-hmm. So is the map a separate map from the map that is in the navigation?
It is a separate map. It is separate from the navigation map. It is a high definition map that sits in a separate map module in the car.
When you say high def, you mean like a 3D map that all the autonomous people talk about?
Well, the map was generated from LiDAR scanning all of these roads.
Oh yeah.
So it is a high definition map, and we use the information that we gathered to tag features of the road. We tag every exit and entrance so that if you're traveling in a lane that eventually becomes an exit lane, we know that and we escalate back to you because we know you're getting off the road. We also use those tags to help us to know where to control. We tag toll booths, right? We have to disengage before a toll booth, right? So there's a lot of features on the roads that we tag in that high definition map, and it sets in that separate map module, and that's what we update. It's not the nav map that you have in the car.
Yeah. So if there's we're driving down 94 and there's a toll booth on our way to Chicago, so the system will escalate as you get nearer to
yes.
the toll booth?
It will.
And just automatically?
It will disengage, and it'll flash red, ask you to come back in because it knows the toll booth is coming.
Wow.
Dave Tuttle writes in. He knows his stuff, so I this is over my head, but maybe you'll know. He said, Elon Musk said again this week that if an OEM wants to add another photon generator, it should be in the 4 millimeter wavelength, since that type of device can see through fog, snow, and rain. What are 4 millimeter wavelength photon generators called, and do you expect them to be installed in autonomous vehicles in the future?
I think they're called 4 millimeter wavelength photon generators. That's about all the more I can say about that.
So, well, anyway, very interesting. Let's see. Lambo 2015 says Super Cruise and Vita X sound great, except they can only communicate with other vehicles that are equipped with the system. So it will be years before the advantage is realized. Well, that's true with Vita X. That Super Cruise just works right now today with anything.
Correct.
And Vita X will talk to other cars, and it'll talk to
lights?
Some of the infrastructure.
Okay,
yeah.
In Ann Arbor, there's all kinds of...
It's wired already.
Right.
Yeah. Ann Arbor is, right.
And Toyota has announced that they're going to put in Vita X in every single one of their cars.
Right.
By 2020, possibly?
That's
early.
Oh, mid-2020s.
Oh, yeah.
All Toyotas and Lexi.
Because I think, what did Cadillac just announce? All Vita X in 2023?
2023.
On everything. So I think it's a significant safety advancement. Lost in the Kerf wants to know, what company provided the LiDAR mapping?
So we work with a company by the name of Usher to do all the LiDAR scanning and processing of the maps.
Never heard of them, but there's all new kinds of companies coming into this space anyway, right? Randy Sullivan Speck wrote in to say, I don't have any questions. I'm just extremely annoyed and frustrated with Cadillac. Super Cruise is apparently only going to come on one vehicle at launch, and it's a sedan, which are dying, and yet won't be available in the plug-in hybrid version of the same sedan, which, by the way, was made in China. Honestly, the best thing GM could make is a plug-in hybrid, 3-row vehicle, capable of comfortably seating 8 people. The hybrid Pacifica would be ideal, but I guess... I just read this thing for you, but...
I told you I was a hybrid chief engineer for a while, right?
No,
I was responsible.
Okay, that's right.
I was responsible for 2 years for the plug-in hybrid transmission that is in the CT6.
And explain this. You've just launched this technology. It's only in one vehicle. And I'll let you fill in the blanks here, Jason, but with a new technology like this, I'm sure you want to start out slow. I'm not even sure the suppliers could give you everything that you wanted to go mass production right off the bat anyway.
Well, sometimes it's good to take baby steps, right? but it is a new technology. It is advanced technology, and it made sense to put it on one of our highest technology vehicles. So, you know, will that change over time? Maybe. You know, but again, you're sometimes it's good to start slow and gain momentum as you go.
Ying Yang Chang wrote back to say, is there any options you can put in Super Cruise not to be on toll roads? I think that's more for the nav system,
yeah,
right?
Nav system, yeah.
I'll take that under advisement.
Let's see. Everything else, I think. Oh, here's a good one. GP Man says, what if somebody stole my Cadillac? Would it recognize them and not turn the car on for a stranger?
No, it will not do that.
I'll take a picture of you.
You got a camera, and you've scanned everything.
We do not recognize and store people's faces in that system.
I see. Yeah.
Now you can have OnStar call the authorities to slow your car down if it gets stolen.
Mm-hmm.
So I want a question about the maps. So I have a Garmin, and when I update the maps for my Garmin, it takes like 3 hours through my computer.
Mm-hmm.
So the over-the-air update for this map, I mean, it's got to be data intensive if you have a three-dimensional map. I mean, is this like overnight or something? Or
No, it's minutes to get that map module, that over-the-air update done.
So you're probably only transmitting exactly what has to be changed instead of downloading an entirely new map.
So not all the 7-Elevens and
No, we don't have every we don't have 7-Eleven and Waffle Houses marked
yet.
If anything's going to get marked, my favorite restaurants are going to get marked first. I probably shouldn't have said that.
You're the chief engineer. What the hell?
Might as well. Let's see. Questions we can address to you. Here's an interesting one from NC. He says, how do you address people that want to compare it to Tesla's Autopilot?
Well, I stay away from comparisons because any comparison that I could do is speculation. I know our system. I don't know their system. Mm-hmm. I don't know their algorithms. I don't know how their cameras work, right? I know how our cameras work. So I couldn't even begin to compare the two. You know, what I always tell people who ask me about that is we have put out what we feel is, you know, a driver assistance system that meets our safety standards. And that's pretty much what I can say. And that's what we've done.
Yeah, no, that's a good answer. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll wrap it up with this then. I had lunch today with a high-tech consultant out of the Valley who told me she saw a TV ad last night for Cadillac Super Cruise. I haven't even seen any TV ads. And it was talking about how, hey, you can take your hands off the wheel. She's a Tesla owner, by the way. And her reaction was, are they crazy? Don't they know what's going on? What do you mean you're telling people to take your hands off the steering wheel? How would you answer that?
We have a driver monitoring system that trains you to always pay attention. And we feel like that is why we can confidently tell people to take your hands off the steering wheel, because we're training you to pay attention.
I think I would add for your benefit, too, that you're not nearly as subtle as Tesla is in telling the driver, hey, pay attention.
Yeah.
And it will disconnect when they don't pay attention. Right. And I don't believe the Tesla system does that.
It will eventually disconnect.
So what if somebody's driving and they just are using the steering wheel to rest their hands?
That's okay.
You
can still do that.
It'll still work.
Our sensors are set up to try to, you know, robustly tell whether you just have your hand resting on the wheel or you've grabbed it.
So you've got both torque and capacitive sensors.
Sensors are what we're working from. We're not using torque.
Oh, really?
Capacitive sensors, but we've done the work to say whether you're just got your hand on the wheel or you've actually grabbed it and you've taken control.
And is the sensor around the full wheel or just the bottom half of the wheel?
It's around the full wheel.
Okay. Hmm.
It's clever.
Yeah.
Well,
there's
real
a
good.
Lot of technology in there. I mean, you know, it's an expensive system. For sure. It has to be.
Well, that's why it's starting out on the top line. Anyways, Jason Dittmar, thanks so much for coming on. Very interesting what you guys are working on. And like I said, having just really experienced the thing with a four-hour drive to the northern part of Michigan and another 4 hours back, it was awesome. It is truly a different driving experience.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to come and talk to you.
Real good. So we're going to cut you loose now, and I think as they unhook you, And we can get to the next part of the show. Gary, is Dr. Data in the house today?
Yes.
All right.
This will be perhaps the all-time easiest one.
Oh,
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Okay, so you know, making a car is a very complicated thing, and there are lots of things involved, and lots of parts that are involved in making a car. And so, Carmen or Katie, could we bring the first slide up, please? So, 3,599 parts. So, you know, one of the things is that you really want to reduce the number of parts that you have to simplify your assembly operation.
Oh, I can guess this.
I'm going to guess.
So, 3,599. Do you want to take the first guess at it?
No, I thought that was just the whole. Not the engine. That's just the whole vehicle.
Well, this is my guess: is that this is how many fewer parts you need to make an electric car versus an internal combustion engine car.
That's a good guess.
That's a very good guess.
But that's not the answer.
But it's absolutely wrong. I like that guess. All right, so let's bring up the answer. It's the number of components to assemble the 1A scale Lego Technic Bugatti Chiron.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
So this is a model that you can buy.
Yes.
For $350.
Yeah.
$350, and it has working pistons and the steering wheel works.
I don't know. Compared to the car ends that I've seen, looks like this Lego version's missing a few parts.
Well, this is in process here that you're seeing. See, look at that.
It does look cool.
So, I mean, look, you have your choice. You can get the 1/8 scale Lego version, or you can spend $3 million and buy a real version. Come on. Yeah. You know, what are you gonna do?
I can afford the model.
Right. And can you afford the time to put all those pieces together?
No, I can't. No.
Somebody can, though. But after we did this, I was looking, and there is a McLaren, a full-size McLaren that someone built out of Lego. And it, like, weighs more than the real car does.
because
McLaren uses all carbon fiber, and obviously Lego is not using all carbon fiber. So,
I'm certain that I would lose, like, 4 key pieces.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Or you'd be left over with parts like, what do I do with this one?
Well.
Okay, let's get to the news, because we've got a shortened amount of time to deal with it. What's big, Gary?
Well, I think that the announcement that Waymo made of buying
62,000 Chrysler Pacificas that they're going to convert to autonomous vehicles.
And that's basically on top of the 20,000 Jaguar I-Paces that they had announced that they were going to be getting earlier this year.
Waymo's getting serious.
They are very serious.
And another thing that wasn't widely announced is that... apparently, Waymo hit close to 7 million miles of testing. This week, they'll fulfill the 7 million miles of road testing.
Yeah, my guess is, not being totally up on this, but Waymo's in the lead when it comes to developing this technology.
And the 82,000 vehicles that we're talking about between the Chrysler and the Jaguar are coming out over...
Three-year period.
Right. So it's not all happening tomorrow, but it's still, it's pretty quick and it's pretty aggressive.
The other thing that I thought was maybe just as significant is FCA also announced as part of their big gig last week that they're working with Waymo to provide retail units to customers of autonomous vehicles. Mm-hmm. They didn't give a timeline, but they sort of implied it's not that far out.
No.
Maybe another 5 to 7 years is I'm filling in the blanks, not them.
To the point about suppliers, I mean, that they know how to do it. So the only thing slowing them down at that point is people being ready to buy it.
And the mapping. Because, you know, these are all going to be geofenced. So until you can start moving those fence posts to a point where people go, yeah, this works for me, they're not going to buy them.
So the question is, was Sergio right? Remember a year or two ago when he made the announcement about how autonomous technology will be commodified going forward, and therefore
cars would be boring.
Let other people develop it, and then after they've spent all the money developing it, then we'll just simply utilize it. Is that a clever move that he made?
It seems to be working for them. I think that situation, it depends. That's a company by company decision. Obviously, GM's going a completely different direction with that and going all in. Somebody has to go all in, or you're never going to get there, right? But you've got enough auto manufacturers there that, yeah, it's realistic. Not everybody has to be leading the development of that system. And the trick is when you get in. And FCA has been sort of a little bit involved, and they're involved with Waymo and have been. And they're involved in the BMW Delphi consortium as well. So they aren't completely sitting out of the whole thing, but they're trying to do it in a way that makes sense for the capital resources.
But, I mean, compared to what Toyota's doing, General Motors is doing, Ford is
doing. Stephanie said the key thing. It's a company-by-company decision. So here's FCA that's promised by the end of this month it's going to be debt-free. So they haven't had billions to put in autonomy and billions to put into electrification. Casergio's focus has been get rid of the damn debt. So maybe now we can sell the company or whatever he wants to do with it. But the point is that for FCA, that was a very good decision to go with Waymo. But what General Motors will tell you is that having full integration of the software and the sensors and the vehicles and be able to do it in mass production is a serious competitive advantage.
And,
that's how they describe it.
Having the mobility platform.
Right.
As well as a vehicle with OnStar, with Marketplace, with the other things that they're working with. GM's is a much more comprehensive and much more aggressive way to go. But realistically, not every company is going to go that way. It should position GM incredibly well, but it doesn't necessarily mean that FCA can't succeed in the way that they're doing it. Ford's a little more confusing, well, in the sense that they're talking about autonomy, but And I understand that they want to get involved in smart cities, and you realize that you can't just do it by yourself. You can't just build an autonomous car and put it out there and have it all just, like, work. There are shareholders involved. But I wonder how much it's Ford's job to rebuild a city. I mean, it feels like sometimes they're kind of pushing in spaces that they can't control and that they can't necessarily monetize, and they're important to explore and have those people in the conversation, but I'm not quite sure what it's going to get them in 20 years versus a GM direction or even an FCA direction.
Yeah. Scott C's just writing in to say, speaking of FCA, what's going to happen to Chrysler, meaning the Chrysler brand? He says nothing was said in the five-year plan. That's not exactly true.
It's not exactly true.
There's going to be 62,000 Pacificas.
Well, yeah, there is exactly. Yeah,
there are.
So Chrysler is going to be a North American brand only.
Right. Dodge. Which it kind of is
already. Which it already is. You're right. Yeah, no news there, right? Same with Dodge.
There's
right?
300s rolling around in Europe. They look pretty cool.
Yeah,
those were sold 5 years ago.
No, you know.
I think I looked at this point, and it's like 98% of Chrysler sales are North America.
Right, and same with Dodge. And, you know, Dodge will be an American brand. I believe they will continue to invest in those brands, but Chrysler might only be a one-product brand.
I was there last week, and in some of the conversations they did, there's at least one other vehicle coming, and the focus
for Chrysler,
and the focus at the FCA meeting last week was to talk about their key global brands. They intentionally talked about the vehicles and the brands that are going to bring 80% of their revenue, and didn't talk about everything to do with the other 20%. One of the things that was different about this five-year plan meeting compared to the two that we went through before is there was a lot less detail, and they didn't seem to feel the need to explain everything. And that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, do they really need to tell us every little thing they're going to do? And yes, because there wasn't a Chrysler-specific deck, some people tried to make the incorrect assumption that meant that they weren't going to be paying attention to Chrysler, and that's not accurate.
Wouldn't you be happy if you're Jim Morrison, though, that we had on the show from Jeep, you know, who's...
Yeah.
Jeep
is the Ram.
Yeah, no, he was
Morrison,
Ram, right.
Morrison Ram.
But Ram,
yeah,
again, but no, Jeep's going to power the company, no question.
And Ram, too, right?
And
they
Ram,
talked
too.
About a lot.
They did talk
about
a lot. And Ram is interesting because you've got the commercial side of things. And so when you look at the vans and stuff that are some of the commercials, some of those will be Fiat commercial vehicles in some markets. Some of them will be Rams in some markets. So those brands will be used where they make more sense.
Is Fiat car dead here?
No.
Not yet.
That was a tough one. So when they talked about the Fiat Green family, there's an EV coming, and there's some plug-ins coming, and there's some Fiat 500 green cars coming with the next go-round. And Sergio Marchionne said he sees, you know, opportunity for them to export the 500E into North America and for that brand to continue.
But the 500E is here now.
The new one. Fiat's not going away. I think it's that's the brand that within the North American context to me feels like the weakest.
Well, yeah. Do you have your numbers there? I want to say they sold like 1,100 last month.
Yes.
I mean,
Alpha's
the brand
them at this
is
point.
Dead. You know, I wonder if there's legal, contractual franchise, blah, 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 that they can't pull out yet.
Yes.
The Fiat brand.
That I don't have the numbers, but my expectation is when you look at the dual dealerships, a fair number of those are distinct franchise agreements.
Mm-hmm.
So even if the dealership building has all four brands, those are not all one agreement. And that could be an issue.
Yeah, this is remarkable. So last month they sold 1,441 Fiats, but 2,377 Alphas.
Yeah, and what was the percentage drop of Fiat sales?
For the month, 46%.
46? That tells you the whole story.
And for the year, 45%. So here's Alpha up 159% for the month and 271% for the year. And
that's adding the Giulia.
But I mean, so basically what you're looking at, though, is that, you know, Fiat's got the 500, 500L, 500X, and the 124 Spider.
Right.
And basically Fiat's got the Giulia. Giulia, Alpha 4C, and Stelvio. And I mean, like, they sold 19 4Cs.
Yeah, the 4Cs.
I mean, this is like, why does that car exist?
But at this point, there doesn't seem to be as much support for Fiat from a marketing perspective. So Fiat brand in North America right now doesn't feel like it's getting a ton of support that way. But there is a new Fiat 500 coming. The electric version will be here. I think a plug-in version of the 500L is coming as well. So, you know, it's not dead.
So Sergio said that the current 500E is basically a compliance car for the CARB states, and that was basically it. Didn't he indicate that he was losing lots of money on everyone that was sold?
Once upon a time, he did.
The last number he threw out was they're losing $20,000 on every Fiat 500E they sell.
Right. So how is this new 500E going to be?
One of the things that is FCA is grabbing hold of electrification a little bit more aggressively than they had before. They were reducing a lot of debt. That impacted, you know, what they could work with on that before. And the other element is Europe and diesels and looking at hybridization and electrification as a solution for meeting European mm-hmm. emissions requirements without diesel.
Right.
And what they're working with now is recognizing that right now EVs aren't necessarily popular or profitable, excuse me. So how do you develop a propulsion system, electrified system for each brand that highlights what that brand-specific characteristics need to be? Mm-hmm. So a Jeep Wrangler plug-in hybrid or a Jeep Wrangler BEV, they're going to focus on that low-end torque. They're going to focus on things that will make that go off-road a little bit better. The Maserati electric vehicle is going to focus on things that make fast cars go fast. So I mean, they're going to try and make sure that they develop these powertrains in such a way that they give the consumer another reason to buy.
Mm-hmm.
Not just, I'm saving fuel and I'm helping the planet, but my car is going to do what I want it to do better. And that's a significant shift and one I think that needs to happen for electric vehicles and for plug-ins as well. I mean, you have to have a reason other than fuel economy. If you're going to break through and get it out of sort of a low volume sort of proposition, you need something else. You need the and. And that's something that all of them are looking at.
So you mentioned that Ford was confused, and John, I want to ask you about this. So If we look at Ford's sales for May, the Escape was down, the Edge was down, the Flex was down, the Explorer was down, and the Expedition was down. Okay, and we recently heard that they're basically putting all their chips on SUVs.
On SUVs.
What's going on?
Boy, I would say red alert, danger. Yeah, that was a real shocker to see. Almost every single one of Ford, probably not the EcoSport.
Well, the EcoSport was new, so you don't have a number for that. Yes. And the Police Interceptor Utility is the only other Ford branded product.
And meanwhile, and I bet you got the numbers there. Sales of the Fiesta were up like 22%.
Yeah, they heard that. People heard you got one, and there was a giant demand that people wanted to do that. Fiesta was up 22%.
I don't know what to make of the fact that Ford's SUVs dropped. You know, I don't know if they were late to the party with some incentives or what the hell's going on.
You know, because if you looked at everybody else, was doing really well. I mean, and it was like the Rogue, an astonishing 38,413 units sold. Yeah. Holy moly.
I mean, see if any of them were retail. But
well, but still.
I do. But I would also point out, because I looked the numbers up, sales of passenger cars fell another 55,000 units. And year to date, pass car sales are off 328,000. And that's only through 5 months.
I know. And incentives are playing. And again, the point
Civic
of looking.
Civic was up 7.4%. Just want you to know that.
But I
still believe in cars.
Oh, no. But Accord was down. And well, remember, we were all saying, oh, Accord's down and Camry's up.
Camry
barely beat out Accord.
Yeah.
And Accord, Honda was saying month over month they're getting better.
In fact, I want
year
to say
over year, they're still down.
Every single one, I think this is right, every single one of Toyota's past car sales were down.
You got it right there.
Nope.
But when we look at the
one
month,
was up?
Corolla IM. Up 26.6%.
Yeah, what was that?
It was on fire.
Four of them.
Unbelievable. It was just
percentages and volumes.
You know, they just people. I mean, I just
okay. But I want to go to Sean Sweeney, who wrote in, because he wants us to talk about the 2022 Mustang, and I'm sure he's saying that because we did a report from Auto Forecast Solutions that the next gen Mustang doesn't come out until 2022.
That sounds right. I would have to double check. I did not double check that before I showed up here today.
See, I don't think that's a problem because Ford's very good at updating the Mustang, at coming out, you know, the Bullet's going to get released. So every, it seems like 18 to 24 months, kabam, they got something to drop on Mustang.
And Chevrolet has done really well with the Camaro doing that, and Dodge is doing that really well with the Challenger. That's the strategy you need for those, the sort of sports car side of things. So Mustang, I think, is still yet another couple of years out. When we look at sales month to month and month, and you try and figure out what's going on because of what, to your point, incentives can make a difference. Seasonality can make a difference. A decision on how you're going to make your change your production mix can make a difference. So it's really hard on a month over month basis to say that what the directionality really is, which is going to be interesting next month when we have GM's quarterly.
Yeah.
Figures, because there's a support for looking at sales on a quarterly basis and trying to find a better sense of the trend.
All right, so I want to be fair to Ford then, since I said all those nasty things about all those vehicles being down. So if we look at the first 5 months, Escape down, Edge down, Flex down, Explorer down.
They're older.
Expedition down.
Except for Expedition.
So
it's a competitive segment.
Across the board, down.
As you build and more SUVs come into the segment, then those segments are going to be just as crowded as pass car segments are today. And you're going to see the pricing pressure, and you're going to see the older cars struggle. Just this behavior is going to continue. It's just going to be in SUVs where it is in passenger cars today.
Yeah, Lawson in the Curve writes in to say gas prices have been creeping up, so that could have impacted pickups and SUVs. But as you're pointing out, Gary, this seems to be an isolated Ford problem with all the SUVs down. Everybody else was doing great.
Yeah.
And just as I mentioned that sales of pass cars were down 55,000 units, I want to say sales trucks, SUVs, crossovers were up like almost 140,000. So we continue to see, even with rising gasoline prices, people are shifting out of cars.
Rising gasoline prices make a difference, but to make a sharp difference, I think you also need some concern about the economy as well.
Yeah.
And right now, from the economic perspective, we're in good shape.
You know, and this is being honestly fair to Ford. So if we look at Nissan sales, okay, so I said the Rogue was up, you know, so it's up 18%. But the Frontier was down, the Titan was down,
Nissan
the Pathfinder
the
was down, the Armada was down, the Murano was down.
Nissan is...
The Quest was down, the NV200 was down.
We're down the most of any automaker.
So
for the second month in a row, because they're talking about sort of moving to a strategy a little bit later, Nissan is now pulling back on fleet and pulling back on incentives, which are actions that several other automakers have been doing for 18 months. And it really hurt them last month, and it hurt them still again this month. But they know, they've talked about it, and they know this is happening, and they believe that that's why it's happening. So I expect to see Nissan struggle for another couple of months as they try to balance their portfolio out, their sales portfolio out a little bit better.
Well, do you have any other burning topic?
Another burning topic.
I know there's never a dull moment. We haven't touched on a lot of things, but let's get one more, and then we should wrap this up.
So since you were gone, we didn't talk about this, but Chevy won the Indianapolis 500.
Yes.
And so last week there
they
was
got their butts kicked. Honda dominated.
There was Honda domination, but
there was another Chevy episode.
There was another Chevy episode, and you know the Corvette ZR1. What an amazing car that is! It's 755 horsepower. It can go from 0 to 60 in 2.85 seconds. Top speed of 212 miles an hour.
And it can go into the wall even faster than that, because everybody knows the story. Mark Royce is driving one of the pace cars.
So Mark Royce, who runs product development for all of General Motors.
And who we'll say is actually a very good driver.
Is a very good driver.
He is a very good driver.
He's probably a very amazing driver. But this ZR1 with all this power and torque, and it has standard performance traction management and electronic slip differential. Mm-hmm. And, because people like to race these things, like you, John, I'm sure that you have never driven a car that you've kept the traction control on.
No, I generally do, actually. But here's the thing. I was at the track, and it was right around the bend from us. Mm-hmm. So we were like,
turn two.
Where the hell's the field? Everybody went out, for their formation lap, and then where are they? And then all the video screens around the track went blank, and then they put up an IndyCar logo. They didn't show anything.
Really?
The PA announcer didn't explain anything that was going on. But we live in a wired world. So all of us whipped out our cell phones to go, what the hell's going on here? Somebody says, it's the pace car crash. And the first thought in my mind was, oh, I hope that wasn't Mark Royce. Honest to God, that was my first reaction. And then the word came, no, it was Mark. And literally within 30 seconds, the video was already available online of him going into the wall. And that's what I said is, oh, look at that. He spun it. He must have had the traction control off. But Henry Payne, the car critic and racer from the Detroit News, was sitting next to me. And he said, oh, no, Johnna. He says, I've driven that car. He says, it's got so much power. It can completely override the traction control and the stability control.
Yeah. Wow.
People have talked all the last week or so just seeing, the journalist. And I've heard several people say, well, he definitely turned the traction control off. I'm thinking, he didn't say that out loud, so I'm not going to make that assumption. To your point, I didn't assume one way or another if that's what he did. I felt like he is a good driver. He does have to go through and maintain certifications in order to be able to do the product development work at Milford that he does. So he's not only good, he's qualified and proves it all the time. And I just had a bad day. And I felt really badly.
I remember when Ayrton Senna, one of the greatest all-time Formula One champions, just crashed it at Monaco, just in the lead, running away from the red, and boom, put it into the wall in a not difficult spot.
All right, but to be fair to Ayrton.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
Mark was ahead of everyone. There was no one racing him, he was in the middle of the course.
I want to say in this year's Azerbaijan Grand Prix, there's another driver named Roman Grosjean. There was a yellow flag, and they're going to start, and how they sort of weave back and forth to
keep their tires.
Yeah, he went right into the wall. So, I mean, even some of the best, can have it happen to them.
And Mark had cold tires.
Well, I don't buy the cold tires argument. What I will say, though, because I've driven that track, is as you come out of turn two, there's a crest, and you start to go downhill. So just as you're going downhill, the car's light. Yeah. And that's just the point where he nailed it. So you have the car light, you're turning slightly, and according to Henry Payne, enough power to override everything. And he just punched the wall a couple of times.
See? So that's a very powerful car. So
it's a very powerful
car. Be careful when you're driving it.
I will certainly, if I ever get the chance to drive it, be very, very careful with it. I am not as good of a driver as Mark Royce is.
Well, at least you're honest.
John is. I'm not either.
Mark's got far more accreditation than I do. Hey, look, we're going to have to wrap this up. But Stephanie, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks.
Always great to
have
you.
And for taking a red eye to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Extra marks. Extra marks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
and Gary, great to be back in the chair with you, too. And, of course, have to thank all of you for having tuned in.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. And by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.